Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
On, so, forgot the paper. But. So on these points, it's very important to note that the second chapter, though, is something that we, you know, probably know the most within the Vaishnava philosophy. You know about we're not the body and the soul and all that. But these very subtle elements that are there, that are very important to appreciate, because if that's appreciated, everything else is based on this. It's always that the Vedic concept is what's fundamental is not lost. It's not like on the bottom and then everything else is piled on top. No, it's on the top and everything extends down from there. Right? In other words, we're servant of Krishna. That's the eternal principle. Right? We engage our conditioned nature or not, that's temporary. You understand? We have a conditioned nature, that's a temporary element. We're serving a Krishna, that's eternal. Right? And so why do we engage the conditioned nature if it's temporary? Because the eternal element of we engage our nature in Krishna's service. So if that nature is spiritual, that's engaged. If it's material, we engage that. You understand? Because underlying the Sanatana Dharma is the soul is Krishna's servant. And as his servant, he engages whatever facilities he has, whether it's spiritual or material. Right? Material here meaning our conditioned nature, the body, the mind, the intelligence. Right? Does this make sense? So that's what we're doing. So these are very fundamental elements. So in other words, because we're saying here Arjuna is, you know, foolish for feeling bad about killing his relatives and all that, right? No? And then after that, having said that, then we, you know, announce today's a fast day because it's Rupa Goswami's or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance day. Right? And then we fast a half day. So what's the difference? What's the point? Why are we saying that here the loss of the physical relationship is a sad thing? And the other we're saying loss of the physical relationship is foolish.
And one that's connected to Krishna.
Yeah, one's connected to Krishna or not. So what is lost when some great personality goes?
His association.
What is to be gained in that association?
Remembrance of Krishna.
Remembrance of Krishna. Yes.
Instructions.
Yes. More important, instructions and their personal example, personal dealings in connection with Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, there's nothing to lament about because those instructions are eternal, the relationship's eternal. It's just there's, you know, that element of separation. Right? Does that make sense? When the gopis finish blinking their eyelid, Krishna's still going to be there. Right? So that blink for 1/11th of a second, right? A nimisha. But is it anxiety for them because the interaction is not as, it takes on a different flavor. Right? In other words, one is remembrance of it, and while the other is the dynamic interaction. Right? Does it make sense? Right? So whether it's there, you spread it out a bit longer. But it's the same principle. Does this make sense? Right. Might appreciate this. That's good. On top of it, on the ball. Yeah. Okay? Does this make sense? So there's something important here. So therefore, if we're looking at it, if it's a matter, okay, now let's say one does have a relative, right? Then what is the real consideration in, as a devotee, of why you would have a relative? Okay, relative is willing to connect to Krishna. So then, if that's the case, what would your relationship be based on?
Preaching
Krishna consciousness. So, what's lost?
Nothing.
Sure? Something must be lost. Maya's lost. Okay, so that's all that's lost when they die.
Well, when they die.
Yeah.
No. You're missing them because of association.
Yes, you're missing the opportunity for association. Okay? Now let us drop it down a bit. You know, make it a little bit, you know, because that's real. But let's make it a little bit, let's broaden the base of this. You know, you understand? What's lost? No one you can preach to. Okay, that's fair. But the point is, yes? The emotional interaction. Okay, but now, the emotional interaction on its own, what's its position? It's temporary. So what is the element that we would define it as temporary?
The conditioning.
The conditioning, okay. And what makes it conditioning?
Forgetting Krishna.
Right? So in other words, you don't... Yes, go ahead.
I was just thinking because we have affection for certain people that we're connected to with that body, but not here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That would be like a third thing. You understand? Is that, in other words, one's not seeing the broadest of vision, but the same thing would create that broadest of vision would also create the proper vision here. Right? Does that make sense? So what is missing?
Bodily connection.
Bodily connection. But what is that based on? Yes, and okay. And so, is there any actual problem in the emotions, the senses, the interaction of the senses?
Yeah, the object is not there, so on the temporary...
Okay, on the temporary level.
If the object is not there, you cannot have it.
You cannot have it, but just the basis of the relationship means, is the concept of a relationship a problem?
No.
So what's actually the problem here?
That the relationship is not based on Krishna.
Yes.
Body.
The body. But what's the problem? Because is the body a problem? You have a body. Is that a problem?
No, because the body is lost. And if it's a relationship based on bodily concept, then you cannot have it.
Yes. So how should it be approached then? How should we approach why we have family members? Because you know what I'm saying? In other words, parents have a child because they're thinking of that great dynamic, you know, spiritual association that's going to be there. Right?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, because you're not exactly sure what you're going to get. Right? You know, Madhvacharya's parents, they, I think, fasted on milk for 8 years or 10 years before they conceived him. Right? And then they got Madhvacharya. So I'm not sure that many parents are working on that principles necessarily. Means they want, so it's just a matter of how much they're committed, how much that is that determination. Does this make sense? So in other words, what is the motive, basically, of the parents to have the child? Okay, that could be on the lowest level, but okay, so let's say sex life. So what would be the next step up from there?
Emotional attachment.
Emotional attachment. So how are you going to get the kid?
Married life.
No, but are you going to get the kid through emotional attachment? Okay, so the emotional attachment can lead to sex life. But the point is sex life is the mechanics for having children. But if it's only based on that, then it's quite a shallow relationship. So the kid will also be quite shallow. Right? But if it's based on the emotions, then it will be of a higher nature. Right? But then what would be above that?
It's based on Krishna consciousness.
But not, okay, but how? Because my point is here, because we're talking mechanics, is... that's the point, but then how do we connect the two?
By doing it in the way that Krishna wants.
Yes, by being involved in the way Krishna wants. And then?
Saying that the result of our activity is not ours.
Okay, the result of our activity is not ours, so what kind of child is still up to Krishna? But does that mean that we don't contemplate what kind of child to have?
We desire to have the best child so that he can preach.
Okay.
Please,
okay. And so then what would that mean if that's the kind of child you want, having produced this child, what's the relationship?
Your responsibility in providing the facilities for the child to develop that nature.
In Krishna consciousness. Now, because you're the parent, they have to? You're the parent, so they have to do what you say. I get a nod over there. I said, that's right. That's what I thought. I said, what was that famous one? Don't do as I do as I say.
Because I said so.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, so now, if you it's based on that, then what's the central element of the relationship then? Okay, it means to be an example, but here it's a matter because the parents said it, that's why you have to do it. Now the parents saying, chant japa or go to the temple, so they're all good things, they're Krishna conscious things, but what's actually the motive behind the parent thinking that because I said it, the child has to do it?
Principle of authority.
Yes, the authority. What else? Yeah, just that sense of authority. So that's the motive behind it. They want to be in that position of authority. They want to have that control. Because if you have control, then what do you have? Enjoying. So I mean, if you control the child, then whatever it is that you're looking for in having the child, you feel you can get. Like, in other words, you think, oh, wouldn't it be nice if the whole family went to the temple now and it all went nice and we stayed together and took darshan and discussed the outfit and this and that. So you're thinking, I will enjoy like that. And then your kid says, no, I don't want to go to the temple. So it spoils your enjoyment. Even though your enjoyment is based on Krishna consciousness. This is the meaning of this element of the karma, the level of karma yoga. Right? If the karma yoga is at the level of sakam or nishkam. Sakam means it's in line with something pious and good. It means we're taking, it could also not be, but I'm just taking in this conversation because we'll always say, yes, Krishna and it should be with Krishna and like this. We'll say that. But the point is the motive sakam or nishkam? Right? Because Rupa Goswami, after explaining that one should be conscious of Krishna, right? Then it should be favorable towards Krishna. So going to the temple and taking darshan is favorable to Krishna. You're conscious of Krishna. Then he says it should be free from karma and jnana. That's the last statement. So is your desire to take your family to the temple free from karma and jnana? Right? But the point is more important, even if it's not, it's better than not at all. Right? Better that you're going to the temple for some other motive, but you're still going to the temple because it's connected to Krishna. But one should contemplate this and see, well, actually, I could be looking at it that, you know, my duty to take care of my family, be Krishna conscious, be in that kind of association and all that, then what's going to happen? What's going to make the difference between if the child says no and your motive is based on sakam, or the child says no and your motive is based on nishkam?
Your own sadhana won't be disturbed.
Your sadhana won't be disturbed?
You find a way of trying to believe in a different moment so the child will go in a different setting.
Yes. Exactly. In other words, you actually will preach. Because the other one is because I said it, you have to do it because I'm the father and you're the child. And the other one is that I'm the father and this is the child, so therefore I'm responsible to see that this devotee becomes Krishna conscious. So as a preacher, right, if you go out on the street and you go up to somebody, hi, how are you, Paul? You know, we're out here, we're talking about Krishna and that Krishna, who cares about Krishna? And then you're going to go, wait, I'm a devotee and you're a nonsense, karmi rascal. You can't talk to me like that. You know, are you going to get very far? Are the other devotees in the temple going to say, yeah, you really told them, you know, those karmi rascal nonsense? Is it going to work? No. What's a good preacher?
He adjusts to the nature of the person you preach.
Yeah, he adjusts to what's the situation. So then he says, no, Krishna, who cares for Krishna? No, so what do you care for? You know, like this. You catch him, you find some way to go with him. But his point is, I don't care. So, okay, so you don't care. Anything else you don't care about, you know. Like that, you know, like, you know, what about, you know, the political situation on Pleiades? You know, it's like, what else, you know. You know what I'm saying? So, like this, you go on. You find something and then you bring them around. So that's going to make the difference. So that means, what is it going to mean? The person who's detached or the person who's attached, who actually is going to be the better parent? The one who's detached. Well, generally we think the one who's detached will be the worst. So, for those who are detached and are bad parents, is it real detachment?
No,
it's aversion. Right? It's a lack of responsibility. They see the trouble. They don't want to take the trouble.
So it's attachment to the
match. Yeah, so it's attachment, but they can't get done what they want, so there's aversion.
Maybe they don't understand the duties.
They don't understand it, so it's a lack of knowledge. Right?
So it's like Krishna says, don't never be attached to not performing your duty.
Yeah, never be attached to not performing your duty. Because there are times when you can't do your duty. Then when you can do, don't be attached to not doing it. Right? Because it does come up. Let's say you get sick, so you can't do your duty. Then you get healthy, then you think, wow, it was really nice not doing anything, so now why should I do something?
So the person is detached, so because of his detachment, he'll have a greater range of angle that he can use, because he's not attached to a specific angle.
Yes, because when you're attached, attachment is a quality of what element? Mode of passion? Okay. Yeah?
Feminine
nature? Okay. But I said of what element? You have eight elements? Gross and subtle. The mind. Okay. Now, in naishkarmya, how do you function on naishkarmya?
The intelligence.
So, what's the difference between the mind and the intelligence in what they do?
Knowledge.
Okay. So, the intelligence works on knowledge. That means your options of what you could do. Well, the mind just works on what it accepts and rejects.
So, the options are less.
Yeah, so the options are less because you've already chosen. So all it is that I'm going to enjoy in this way by how I think it should happen. You do that, it's nice. You don't do that, it's not nice. So therefore, you'll get anger after frustration. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Well, if you're working on the naishkarmya, then you're working on intelligence. Okay, that didn't work. Then find a way to make it work. Right? And you'll use your intelligence to come up with a variety of ways to get it done. Does that make sense? You call this class, I say, Bhagavad Gita for better parenting. Nice seminar. Yes?
Can one be on the platform of naishkarmya and not be very intelligent?
Can you be on the platform of naishkarmya and not be very intelligent? How do you define intelligence? You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise there's so many ways you can define intelligence.
not having such a, in this example, not having a broad spectrum of ideas.
Not having a broad spectrum of ideas. Means yes, because point is because of, now, here's the it's both the strong point and the weak point of being a parent. Why is the parent a parent?
Because he's attached.
He's attached. So if you're attached, that's your motive. So therefore, even if you haven't thought about it and don't have a broad range, because you're attached and want the results, then you'll endeavor to get it. You understand? But if you're working on the platform of intelligence, then you'll use your intelligence to think, you know, maybe you didn't think of it now. You know, it's just like somebody said something, you didn't know what to say back, you know, and as soon as you walk away or, you know, something, then you immediately think of this great line that you could have said, right? So it always works. So like that, then it will come, and then you use it later. You know, so it's slower, it's not immediate, but you will get it. You know what I'm saying? So you'll think about it and you will get the results. So it may take you longer, but you actually get the results. Right? You know what I'm saying? So it means later when you go and look on Facebook, then your kid has a bead bag in their hand rather than, you know, half a spaghetti tank top. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So like this, then you can, you know, it may take longer, but it works. Yes?
A parent is a parent because they are attached.
Right.
And in order to be a good parent, one has to be detached.
Yes.
How does that work?
Now you're starting to understand. That's why achinta beta beta tattva. These two can work at once. Your motive, underlying motive to be involved may be attachment, but your actual application of it still has to be on knowledge, right? It means if you don't know the field and the results you can get from the field, then you can't perform the action, right? So if you just think, because I feel this way, then everything will work out. You know, I mean, it's nice, but in reality, it doesn't necessarily work like that. But the point is because you have that mood and all that, and know what you want, right? Then things will work out, right? But the point is there's supposed to be knowledge. There's supposed to also be knowledge, right? Does that make sense? So, that underlying mood is important, but so with time you change it from attachment to what I want, to attachment that I want that's connected to Krishna, then it's attachment to, you know, to doing things for Krishna, you know, to attachment to just Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that the conditioned nature is left out. Right? So the lower level is because I want it, but, you know, okay, I can connect it to Krishna. Then it's, okay, I'm doing this, and I want to give the result to Krishna, give my result to Krishna. Then later on, it's just, I just work for Krishna. Krishna, the Gita says, just work for me. That means you do the work just for him. Though you're doing that work that you like to do. In other words, the difference is all three levels you're doing means the lowest level, you're doing the work because you may like the work, but you're more into the result. Right? Then you come to the point where you're not into the result, but you're comfortable with that work. Then you come to the point where you're just trying to please Krishna, and you use whatever facilities are available. Does this make sense? Now, in this, we're not the, how do you say? So we see more here practical stuff, but there's the how do we break down the emotional attachment? We have that emotional attachment. Okay, we accept that it's a motive that you're going to be involved in the relationship. The principle of relationship is good because ultimately there's a relationship between you and Krishna, you and the devotees. Right? So that you'll be involved rather than just be in ignorance and not do anything or just worry about yourself. Right? So you have that motive to benefit the other person. And that emotional interaction is the basis. You know, I mean, it's your prominent thing that you want to get from that relationship. How to connect that to Krishna?
Knowledge.
Knowledge, and what is this knowledge?
Knowing how it is already connected with Krishna.
Already connected to Krishna, and how is that already connected to Krishna working?
Understand Brahman and Paramatma.
Brahman and Paramatma, what does that mean?
Understanding the qualities, how they interact.
The qualities and the interaction. In other words, you're attached to a certain emotional experience. How does mechanically that emotional experience work? What is it about the emotional experience you want? You know, like the exam we gave before, the family going together. So that feeling of togetherness, you know, that common basis that together we're going and everything, you know, something straight out of the, you know, Jehovah's Witness magazine or something like that, you know, all the pictures and the smiles and all that kind of thing. So, you know, it's like, so, but it's the togetherness that we're looking for, right? Because we're saying if that happens, then I'll be happy. So our happiness is based on togetherness. And that togetherness, then, the form of it's going to be, as a group, the family is going to go to the temple and stay together in the temple and have interactions based on what's in the temple. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So in other words, the sense of that togetherness, that's Krishna. Right? And the mechanics of how you would be together, that's Lakshmi. Right, so we can be servants to see that we perform those authorized forms. That's Lakshmi in serving Krishna as togetherness. Does this make sense? So that's the most technical, the most intellectual. Means whatever you do, why can you do something? Like, why do dogs bark? Okay, but that's the mechanics of how it works. But why doesn't it change? According to scientists, it should change. Why doesn't it change? And where is it given that way? Because what we're seeing, that's the creation of Brahma. So where is it seen that dogs bark and wag their tails?
It comes from the unmanifested cause.
The primary creation, right? Means, in other words, Krishna manifests the creation. In other words, as a universal form, he creates everything and enters into everything. But in its that primary state, it's not manifest. You don't see it. Therefore, then Brahma, when he, as the engineer, means, that's what Prabhupada says about the blueprints. Krishna's made the blueprints. So everything that is in the world can happen in the world. All actions, all relationships, all results is already in the blueprint. So no one can do anything outside of the blueprint. That's why you do something, it works, and do something else, it doesn't work. What works is in the blueprint. What doesn't work is not in the blueprint. Right? So that blueprint is the interaction between the Lord and His energy. Right? Because the Lord does not consort with the external energy. He only consorts with the internal energy. Right? So in this example, then we're saying, therefore, all qualities, means that everything that one does is based on a quality. Right? We don't necessarily think of that way, especially in the modern age because of our consumerist training. But previously it was based on relationships or religious ideals or something. There was some other, it was the mood that you'd get from it rather than just, you know, happy that you have it. Right? In other words, it would be the result of a relationship interaction. Right? Well, now it's just that you have it. There's a potential for the relationship. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, just like, let's say, I don't know how you would, what would be the correct term, because we don't want to use any pejorative terms here. But the, let's say your standard, you know, box office Hollywood movie. If it ends, then what are you ending with? Happy ending means the relationships are there and they're working.
And
you've gotten the result. What?
And there's money.
That's another thing. But you've gotten that. Now, if we take an avant-garde ending, you know, a film noir, something like that, what is the ending?
The tragedy of life.
Tragedy of life or a potential. Right? Just a potential. He could do this, he could do that. They just leave it there. And so they're excited about that because it's potential, it's fresh, it's new. Well, the other one is you've just got the ending. That's old, boring. Of course, you know, guy gets girl, hey, everything's up. But here he could do this, he could do that. You know, it's like, you understand? It's just different attachments. One's attached to prayojana, one's attached to, you know, options. You know? Does that make sense? And each one will say the other's movies are stupid. Right? Does that make sense? You know, those who are, you know, into art films can't stand good endings. You know, to them it's the stupidest thing in the world. Right? And those who like standard movies think the art films, they know it's like a waste of time. You know, absolute waste of time, right? So both have this, you know, where's the intelligence? Why? Because options are intelligence. And result is the mind. So one thinks, oh, yeah, it's too academic, you know, too intellectual. And the other, oh, it's just too sentimental. You understand? But one is ending with what the mind's looking for, and the other is what the intelligence is looking for. The option, right? Pujumna is the field is there, and then you have options. So they spend the whole movie to get to options. Well, the other one spends the whole movie getting through options, endeavor, and then, you know, failed endeavor, then refreshed endeavor, and then result. Right? So in other words, of the two, which one's more applicable in your life? The result. Right? Because the options doesn't tell you what to do with them. Well, the other one has told you what to do, whether it's right or not, you want to do what they do. That's another thing.
But all these movies sell more, because even though it looks more high in the sky, in one sense it's closer to how things work.
Yes, because you've gone through the thing, there's a field, you've made your endeavor, you've gotten your results, which is actually a complete pattern. Well, the other one is just you look at the field and this, and but this adds something to the field and changes it, and that adds something to the field and changes it. They keep just morphing it until they come to one point and you go, okay, here's what I was trying to get to. You understand? So then it's a whole intellectual presentation. But they don't do anything because, and those who are into that won't tell you what is a real life, what you should do with it. Well, the others are very committed. No, you do this, and whatever is their lifestyle, they're very convinced of it. Well, the other, they think just being intellectual, that's a complete lifestyle. It means, in other words, being an armchair speculator is actually fulfilling. Right? So they're both wrong. But at least the karmi, there's the concept of complete rasa. Well, for the jnani, there's no rasa to them as stupid. So that's why it's easier to preach to a karmi than a jnani. You think, oh, he's intelligent, he's a professor, he's a this, he's a that. He would be easier, but actually he's tougher because he doesn't actually understand relationships.
Intellectual idea of never reaching a conclusion.
Yes, intellectual idea of not reaching a conclusion. Otherwise, why would that be fun? Because it's speculation. The options are there to speculate, do whatever you want with. And they'll say, you know, yeah, I came to an end, so it's finished. No, this is, it's fresh, it's new. It's like, yeah, but, you know so what to do. So, yes.
And what about the conception of breaking the attachment by understanding its material futility, that I'm attached to my wife, she's just a bag of bones.
Okay, so she's just a bag of bones. Okay, great. And she's probably, you know.
Huh?
What was that? Yeah, yeah. No, it's just like, just, no, no, but I'm just saying, just a funny point on this is that one time I was here, it was probably, it would have been like, probably like 74 or something here in Mayapur. There's this one devotee named Bhakti John. Very, very far out devotee, very eccentric, but very intelligent like that. So he was always, you know, doing something like that. And then this, I guess this new Brahmacharini came to Mayapur, and he had his friend. You know, they'd always hang out, Bhakti John, this other devotee. And then this girl came. She's very, very attractive. And so then they both, she I guess, just came in, and they both saw her. You know, so the one then says, ah, you know, just, you know, another bag of stool or this or that, like that. And like that. And Bhakti John said, yeah, but she's got all the stool in the right places. Like that. So, okay.
Maya, so in a broad sense, what you're telling us would lead to a community based on relationships rather than rules.
Yes, based on relationships. Rules define so that the relationships will go like, why say there should be fidelity in marriage?
Because if there's not, the relationship breaks.
Yeah, relationship breaks, or how deep can the relationship be if, you know, you never know from day to day who your partner is going to be hanging out with. You know, it's just, you know, a couple of times a week, oh, you're home, yeah, okay, great, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? How deep can it be? So in other words, if the idea is you have material attachments and you want to, therefore, be involved in material attachments, right? Wouldn't it be? If you have material attachment, you want to be involved in an experience that deals with that material attachment, right? So then should that, if the material attachment isn't technically fulfilled, will you be satisfied? No. But if it's fulfilled and the result of fulfilling that material desire is in an environment where it can be compared to fulfilling spiritual desire, and you can see the difference between them, would that be better? So now, would you want to compare a not really well-performed and therefore proper result material desire against the spiritual? Or would you want to compare something that's been properly done, you've gotten the full result that you can get on the material platform, and compare that to spiritual? Which would be the advantage?
The second. Because in the first you may maintain the doubt that I didn't really get it, so I can't really compare.
Yeah, because you might think that there's, if I'd done it this way, then it would have been nice. But that's why the Vedas explain how to, you know, it means that art, dharma, artha, and kama, right? They explain this, or moksha, because these are material concepts. But they explain, you want artha, this is the way to do it, because then you've done it, and then when you've done as much as there is, then you get bored. Right?
But is it possible that one may come to the same realization through a train wreck or something?
Means you can, but the point is will it last? If it's strong enough to last, great. Like in the seventh canto, when Narad Muni is discussing with Yudhishthira Maharaj Varnashram Dharma. So he explains Varna Dharma. Right? You know, in other words, you know, what someone should do and everything, what's like that. Having explained Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, then after that he describes women. Because they'll have that nature, but then they'll have the nature of woman. Then after that, then he describes malechas. Right? Because saying is that the malecha, by being so absorbed in the sinful activities, then they become, how you say it? They lose the taste. Right? It's just like you pour a little ghee on the fire, it gets bigger. You pour a lot of ghee, the fire goes out. Right? But the point is it's based on the principle of enjoying their senses and doing whatever they like. So they've gotten a bad reaction, so at that moment they may take up the inquiry into Krishna consciousness. Right? And if they do, then they get benefited. But now, when the pain of that situation, or in this case your train wreck or whatever it is over, then what are they going to be left with? What's their inherent way of behaving? Sense gratification, however they feel like. So unless, if they've made enough advancement, so now they have faith in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and they won't do it by however they feel, and they'll do proper, then great. But if they don't, then what happens?
They'll go back.
They'll go back.
Or they try to enjoy in a proper way this time.
But then that means they have faith in Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But I'm saying is they don't necessarily. That's the weakness in it. But it will work. But now, if you think about it, so many devotees who are dynamically practicing Krishna consciousness now who are not, what is the basis of them not doing that? Devotees who before were more involved in direct, you know, Krishna consciousness and preaching and, you know, like this, and now they're not, what is the basis for them not being involved?
They resorted to the previous lifetime.
Which means? That's there, but I'm just doing, yeah. They weren't emotionally satisfied because they want to do things however they like, and they go back to their sense gratification. You can say so many things, well, this one this and that one that, or devotees disappointed. They'll talk all day, but actually it comes down to all it is they couldn't get past their malecha lifestyle. Because when they go back to the same lifestyle. You just remove, you know, the major impurities. Right now they're vegetarian, you know, they don't gamble, you know. Yeah, like that. you understand?
But a lot of us came by, you know, from this category, like we, you know, we try to enjoy in the most, you know, derivative way, and then we got frustrated.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yes. So a lot of us are in this situation.
Yes, so that's the point, is that that's why through knowledge, you know, in other words, the mind has a particular kind of, what do you call it, predilection, and there's also another word like that, predisposition, yeah, like this, that in a way of thinking and culture and emotions, then how are you going to change it? By education. That's the easiest. Otherwise, what's the other option? Experience. Which means then you have to get kicked around the block a little bit more, right? So you've been kicked around the block enough. So now you're willing to take it up. Now if you take up intelligence, in other words, this section is called Buddhi Yoga, where we're supposed to discuss. If you take that up, then you can change how the mind looks at things. Right? How the mind looks at things. And then, when it does actually need to, you know, actually deal with the senses and sense objects in a dynamic way, you'll have changed the basis of that. So instead of it being like a malecha, it will be like, you know, a follower of the Vedic culture. That's why Prabhupada always talks about Varnashram. Which is better, malecha culture or Varnashram? Okay, so since a conditioned soul is going to follow a culture or a, you know, how you say, organized lack of it, you know, like that, then which is better? A pious culture or an impious culture? Right? So that's why Prabhupada talks about Varnashram. Not that we really care about Varnashram. But since people are going to function in a religious environment, better one that's given by God than one that we make up ourselves.
Could you summarize that we have had many failures in the West because the Bodhi Yoga wasn't properly or not enough?
Yes. But no, it's never not enough. It's a matter of whether we take it. Okay. The Bodhi Yoga itself is enough.
No, I mean, in attending.
Oh, yeah, in attending. Because what was, like, in the beginning of the discussion, when it came to something where it was very obvious about, you know, Maya and Krishna, what would we say? We pick Krishna, right? But the point is that thing that we were talking about, that mundane situation, and Krishna, was there a gap between them in practical application? Right? Because the grihastha thinks, I take my family to the temple, that's Krishna conscious. They don't go to the temple, they're in Maya. Okay? And because I'm attached, so therefore, just because I want it, it should happen. Right? So now, they can't see that they're starting with this actual situation their family's in, and then the ideal that they want to get them to. And they think, just because I feel like that, it should happen. Okay, nice. If you feel, so that's spontaneous devotional service. Great, you feel, so you should. But are you dealing on that spontaneous spiritual platform with the family, or you're dealing on a spontaneous mundane platform? Right? So those things that you can directly do, that's the best. You can't, then you see, you know, these social elements and other, you know, techniques and all that that would work better. Then that's the next. And if that still doesn't cover the attachment, then you have to get down to what he's talking about, is seeing, breaking down the attachment itself, that actually what you're attached to is still Krishna. But you think it's the body and you think it's the relationships.
Yes. What is this middle concept, social element? I don't understand.
Social element means, okay, I didn't get a good result by, you know, being so strong, so I should try being a little more soft. And, you know, like when you go to a self-help seminar, they're going to tell you all this stuff like that, you know. What is it? What is that one? I can't remember the first part. The last part of it is let God.
Let go.
Let God. Oh, let go, let God. Yeah, like that. You know, it's like, in other words, I'm so attached to the thing, so I got to, you know, distance myself a little bit, and so therefore, you know, I'll let go a bit, and so I won't be so, and then I'll be able to see things better, and, you know, let God, you know, reveal something, then I can do, right? So this is one based on understanding that in Prayojana, it only comes by God's grace. But they're actually thinking that I'll let God and then I'll do it. You know? You know what I'm saying? So they all have their little things, you know, like the, what do you call it? The law of attraction and what? Yeah. Law of attraction is just to attract, you let it attract, you know. So they take one part and they get some idea, but it's still. Does that make sense?
This is the way of dealing with the attachment?
What I'm saying is that's one level of dealing with the attachment, is you're dealing with the application of the qualities. But if that still doesn't fully connect it to Krishna, you know, you can see is okay, but the point is why are those rules there? They're there by Krishna. Krishna said this is how you're supposed to deal. Right? Krishna explains, you have this kind of relationship with these kind of people, and this is how you're supposed to deal. So you're basing it on that. Right? Does that make sense? So either dharma, artha, and kama there. If not, then you look at this moksha aspect, that actually it's because ultimately it's Krishna. What I'm looking for is Krishna. Right? So it's not dynamic there, because you're going to have to do something. Right? So now, best is that you see it in that knowledge, and then you act in such a way that's also based on Scripture. Does that make sense? It's approved by Scripture. Then it's balanced, because then your dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are all based on Scripture. And you're doing all that in support of God consciousness, right? Trying to serve Krishna. So what we're trying to say is that these things have to be practically applied. Right? Because the point is what Krishna's saying here, is the body is temporary, it's going to die. There's nothing you can do about it. And the soul is going to live forever. And the soul's so small, you can't do anything to it anyway. You know, in other words, you can't kill the soul. It's impossible. It's too small. And the body is never going to stay. Right? So why are you lamenting? The body's going to go and the soul stays. You say, well, you know, I can't kill the body because you think they're the body. No, they're the soul, so they're not going to die. Right? And you think, well, I killed Bhishma. You never killed Bhishma. Because the actual Bhishma is the soul, and the soul's still alive. Right? So you can actually start to see is, then you can break it down, which will be in these later chapters, how the work is going, how the understanding of that, how to combine understanding and work. Right? That's going to be the next three chapters. Yes?
Because all the souls are included, if it is possible that one soul, one eternal soul, has some relationship with another eternal soul,
Based on what?
Based on what he is. So, like, what if I saw Mahal to be able to be able to address with me some relationship on that level, easier to understand. Is it possible on the lower level, like, attachment is there between one soul and another, and since losing the body is losing the opportunity to communicate, because we're not...
Yeah, but what is... But this is my point, is what's communicating? Love, but what's it based on? Yes, but where does that feeling come from? Means there's a, I mean, in English you have the term fall in love.
Yes.
Right. And now it's just something new, I think, started in the 80s or something. Fall out of love. What happened? That's what I said, but you know, like that, but they use it all the time. In other words, you love somebody and now you don't. I know, but I'm giving you an example. Where did the love come from? You have dead matter, right? Right? You have two souls, right? So you just have two, 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, floating around. Is that what's happening in your relating?
My question is...
I'm not talking about that. We've heard your question. We're analyzing your question. So what's relating? Actually the souls? What's the love for? The soul? Or it's for the particular conditioned nature that's there? In other words, two conditioned natures are attracted to each other, right? And because the souls relate to the conditioned natures, therefore they think they're related to each other.
That's my question. Is it possible the relationship between the souls?
Okay. The set point. Do you want an answer, or do you want to, or do you want to discuss it, or do you want me to say what you want to hear?
No, I want to.
Okay. So we're going through the logical step of breaking down that. First of all, it can't be happening on the material platform. Then we're going to look at how can it be possible on the spiritual platform. Okay. So the point is there is a physical. Observable, body, right? And that has a particular personality, right? So the gross and subtle natures are there. So those gross and subtle natures may be connected, right? But the point is, why is the particular soul in that particular conditioned nature? What caused it?
His desires?
And
the reaction of...
Yes. In other words, their karma. And so the point is, since there's only so much karma that you can do, so many varieties, there's going to be something that matches. Does that make sense? You know, this person performed this sinful activity, became a dog. That person performed that same sinful activity, also became a dog. Now they're friends. Right? So it's not that the souls are friends, the conditioned natures are friends. But the souls identify with it, so therefore it appears that it's there. But that conditioned nature has already been defined by Krishna. And the working principle behind it, as we said, is in the primary creation. Then there is the sense of that kind of interaction. It's already defined there. Based on whatever it is. You say love, or attraction, or affection, or excitement, or whatever it is that you would say is the common element of the relationship. Right? So that element then is originally in Krishna. So therefore, it goes on eternally. The soul's connection with that conditioned nature, that's what's temporary. So in this life, then they have this nature. Those natures match. But, that nature is always available. So any soul that performs the karma that ends up with that result will be attracted by the companion nature that it goes with. You understand? So therefore, on this level, we can see that there's no material, eternal relationship between the souls. Okay? Can we just go to the next level? Okay. So now you can say, okay, on the spiritual platform, then you might have two souls that they're connected and, good friends or whatever it is forever. Okay? But what's that based on? Right.
To Krishna.
Yes, service to Krishna. Like Mother Yashoda and other elder gopis, they're great friends, and they'll be great. They always have been, and they always will be. But it's based on their particular service to Krishna. In other words, these rasas and that are defined by Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. Right? So what is the definitions of these? So whoever has that taste, then they have an eternal relationship. But based on Krishna and that service. Well, in the material world, it's still based on Krishna and the particular activity you do, but it's an illusion because you don't know the activity. Does that make sense? So in other words, souls can only have a eternal relationship based on service. You may like, but who's the you that's liking? The soul, but the soul is appreciating what? Okay, yes. The soul is appreciating those. Why? Because at this particular point, they identify with those qualities. Right? And the other person identifies with them, otherwise why would they have them? You know what I'm saying? You like nice clothes, somebody else likes nice clothes, so you appreciate their, you know, particular liking of nice clothes, and they appreciate yours. You have some basis of relationship. It is mundane.
It is mundane, but soul has qualities also.
Yes.
So, another question, basic question. Is there any...
Why don't we try this? What is your purpose in asking the question? What answer are you looking for?
Just answers to my question.
Yeah, no, but there's a particular idea that you have that you want answered. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there's a concept that you have that you're trying to get to. No, if you don't, why is it you keep going back to something? Otherwise, you would have just asked the question and listened. But you keep going, no, but what about this? What about that? What about... What is it that you're thinking will happen? But what is it you don't understand?
Okay, I don't understand. Between two souls, only friendship is possible, or other races also can be there?
What's your point? Why would it matter?
Okay, then, because, can it be that first question, is it possible that this eternal relationship between two souls somehow appears here? If one person is attracted by another, not necessarily other sex, yes, but to another person in the body, somehow,
can it be based on their relationship in the spiritual world? No. No. Because the point is you're not seeing that. What you're seeing is the gross and subtle body. You're not seeing the qualities of the soul. So no, it's not like that. That's the point. So,
let's see, at some point, you know, I was a dog and my friend were a dog and we were hanging together.
Yeah, you might have a similar karma, so that's why it says that the straws in the river come together for some time. That some time can be a few minutes, it can be even a few lifetimes, but at some point it splits because they are individuals.
So when me and Rover somewhere down the line, we become self-realized, we go back to Krishna. We will still know each other. I mean, not like that we were dog, but...
Not necessarily. I mean, so why would you talk about it? You know, why would somebody whose their absorption is in, you know, Krishna, talk about how when we were both worms eating stool, right?
You know? I'm just saying, with that soul, we will still be a part of, you know, the... The people I meet that I have a relationship.
The point is everybody's related to Krishna. Everybody's come from Krishna, so everyone's related. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that Krishna is the basis. They may know what they've done, but it'll be more of like in service or this or that. You know, the things that you do here, you may, you know, it may come up in a conversation there, may or may not. Yeah. Remember that time that you stole my gulab jamun? You know, like that. You know. So, Because the point is it's all happening there. So whatever would happen here is happening there in its perfection. Like, you know, here you really thought you stole this gulab jam. You never really seen real stealing of the gulab jam. And there you see it. You know, how cleverly they'll do it there will be much more clever than how they did it here.
As we take up sadhana bhakti and get closer to the spiritual reality, are the relationship we're having becoming more based on the relationship we will have in the greatest?
No, it's what's the basis of the relationship? You have to understand what's the principal point, what's the detail. What's the principal point of a relationship here?
In Krishna consciousness, like a sadhaka.
Since that was your conversation, why not? That was your example, so let's go with that.
We're trying to learn ourselves.
Okay, and in the spiritual world, you have two devotees. What's the relationship based on?
Pure devotion service.
Okay, but what's the common element, whether it's pure or not?
Krishna.
Right? And what about Krishna?
Devotion to Krishna.
Service to Krishna. That's the basis of the relationship. So you have a relationship here based on service. Then you can have a relationship there based on service. Whether you're doing the same service or this, that's not the point. That's a detail. You know, it's just like you're here with somebody who's a friend here in Mayapur, and you do one thing together, and then later on you're somewhere else in another temple, another situation, doing something together. It's completely different from what you did here. Does it matter? No, you're going to base it on what you did there. You know? Does that make sense? So the point is relationship based on service to Krishna is the fundamental element. Does that make sense? That's the point. We get attached to these little details, you know, because it sounds nice, but the point is that that's not the principle. Point is that it's there, because if you get attached to something here, then when that's not happening anymore, you'll be disappointed. You know, if it's based on that we do this specific service, and when they're not here, then you can't do that. But if it's based on serving Krishna, when they go, then it's just a matter of time. Does that make sense? Yes.
Are our souls completely identical?
Are the souls completely identical? What do you mean by identical? Are they all exactly the same, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair?
Well, I'm trying to figure out personality if and material conditioning.
Material conditioning is what's set by the modes of nature. There's 8,400,000 species of life, and then little detail within that.
So would a soul in the spiritual sky like all other souls equally much, or is there some kind of...
Why would they have to like equally much? What's the necessity? No, the point is each soul is uniquely individual. So they have their own, you know, perspective on serving Krishna. But it's compatible because Krishna is the center. Like when Prabhupada gives the example of throwing one rock into a pond, how many circles do you get? You get one circle? You get so many. However big the thing is, you get that many circles, right? So what's the important aspect of the analogy? There's only one rock, so there's one center. And then unlimited circles can go around one center. So the point is each circle is different from the other. They're all circles, but each one has a different size. So that means each soul is individual. But each soul is centered on Krishna, so therefore they have no problems working with each other. Right? And so depending upon what service you have, that's where you're going to make your friendships. Mother Jashoda is going to hang out with who?
The gopis.
Yeah, the other elder gopis. Right? That's going to be your friends. What about younger gopis? Are they her friends? No, they're like daughters. Yeah. What about the cowherd boys?
Sons.
More like sons. Right? You know what I'm saying? But they're going to be friends. The cowherd boys, right? Who are they going to hang out with? Yeah. You know, and what about the older gopis?
They're like mothers.
They're like mothers. So in other words, you interact with these different groups, but your friendship, your closeness is in with those who like-mindedly serve Krishna. Right? But there's a difference. Otherwise, what's the importance of expanding the souls if they're always all exactly the same? Right? Then why do you need everybody?
That was my confusion.
Yeah? No, but each one's unique. Same time as you know, Radharani is the complete energy of the Lord. So whatever variety there is in any aspect of Krishna's unlimited energy, which means unlimited variety, that's found in her. That's why she's the perfect devotee. While in us, we will be different from another soul, but only we'll have a particular range of qualities. But it's finite. Right? While another soul have a different range of qualities. Right? But, you know, someone who's bigger in the position, they have a broader range. Right? But Radharani has the broadest. That's why she is the only one who can completely fulfill all of Krishna's desires. So everybody else can assist in that according to their nature. So in their nature, since Radharani unlimited, qualities to serve Krishna, the qualities that individual jiva has, he assists in those qualities of Radharani. Right? So in other words, she's already serving Krishna, plus you have another living entity who's adding to that service in those qualities. And that way then unlimited souls can be assisting Radharani serving Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes. No, you can develop with the devotees, but it's based on service. It's not based on anything else.
Okay, then the question comes in, sorry. If I'm making garland, another girl is making garland, and tomorrow she doesn't come, the only thing that should matter here is that someone else is making garland, because service is important. So I should not be upset, because any feeling of being upset that there is not that girl anymore here is material.
Any. Okay, what about that you inspired each other in making garlands? Is that material? So then, why do you say that's the only basis of the relationship?
I tried to catch this point of attachment.
Yes, but point is the problem is not the attachment, it's what you're attached to. How you see it in relationship to Krishna. So if you're attached to that they do service for Krishna nicely and you're inspired by that, then that attachment's not bad. If you're just attached to it because you just, on the mundane platform, like that particular quality, then that's a bit mundane. But at least if then you use it to socially deal properly and then you're, you know, emotionally balanced, so therefore you can do your service nicely, then that's good. Well, some don't have friends at all, and so they're emotionally unhinged, and they can't do anything properly. Does that make sense?
Is it important to consider if the people with whom we're performing service, if our relationship with them will continue in the spiritual world?
No. You don't have to go.
Are you going to be there in the spiritual world?
Can you fill out this questionnaire? Where will you be in the spiritual world? Which particular realm of the spiritual world?
What's your address?
Yeah, what's your address? You live on the first gully or the second gully? You know? Like that, no. But it's by, you're generally served by who has the same, you know, philosophical determination in line. There's got to be some commonality in your service to Krishna.
Determination and line.
Means, in other words, someone else who wants to go to Vaikuntha and you are going to Vrindavan, what's going to be the basis of your relationship?
Appreciation for Krishna.
Okay, as long as they appreciate, you know, they're into Andal's prayers and stuff, so they may appreciate what you're doing. You know, So there'll have to be some common point there. But the point is ultimately they're going somewhere else than you. No, just that's the truth. So how deep it will be, there'll be an appreciation, but it may not be that deep. You know, it may be something else. They're just so focused and determined in their service to Vishnu, and that inspires you to be determined to serve Krishna. So you may appreciate that quality, and so like that, then you have a good relationship. But ultimately, they're going somewhere else. In other words, the point was, you know, where we were more on the before the mystical element came along. Yeah, it was on that. But the point is what are the relationships based on? Do we base it on the philosophy? Can we see the philosophy in that relationship or not? If we're able to, then you understand what the second chapter is talking about. If not, then even though we've heard the words, we haven't realized. You understand? So the point is, by contemplation and practice, that's how we get realization. So we shouldn't take, this is just the second chapter, you know, then you don't take it seriously. Point is this is the basis of the whole Gita. Right? So everything else will be based on this.
They said
that the whole Gita is contained in this chapter. Yes. So verses 38 to 53, Buddhi Yoga. In verses 10 to 30, the Lord defeated Arjuna's sentimental compassion for the bodies of his relatives. And in verses 31 to 37, the argument based on sense enjoyment was rejected. It was the bodies of his relatives, because he's seeing that that's the relationship. No, it's actually based on the soul. Right, so you're trying to serve Krishna, they're trying to serve Krishna, and you have compatible conditioned natures to serve Krishna with. So that's the relationship, not the body. Right? In other words, the parent wants to serve Krishna through training a child, and the child wants to have a parent to raise them. So you have compatible relationship. But the basis is becoming Krishna conscious. Right? Does it make sense? And then the argument based on sense gratification, that's temporary anyway, so you can't base something on that. It has to be on something more. You base a relationship on sense gratification. When sense gratification is not there, the relationship breaks. Right? So then that's the most temporary of anything. Right? The emotions are a little longer. Right? The Krishna consciousness, that's the eternal position. In verses 53, Krishna defeats Arjuna's argument that fighting will bring about sinful reactions. In his commentary to verse 238, Sri Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes, did we do this?
Yes.
How far did we get?
We finished, in other words, in results, that paragraph.
So we're verses 38 to 39?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so, in other words, Arjuna's making a point that Shastra supports, right? But, in applying the Shastra, what do you have to consider? Time, place, circumstance, right? Because you're taking a body of knowledge, right? Which is Jnana, right? Right? What are you studying? Right? What part of speech do you study when you look at the field of activities?
Nouns.
That's all you can study is nouns. You know, or past action, but then you're looking at it from that aspect of how it transformed the nouns. Right? But if you're going to apply that knowledge to the present, the application is done through what part of speech? To the verb. And the verb controls what?
The complement.
The
object.
It complements the object, but it's dealing with, what does it directly deal with? The time, the place, and the circumstance. Right? In other words, the mood, you know, the situation, you know, past, present, and future. Like that. Does this make sense? So this is what it deals with. So if one doesn't apply that, so that's where the weakness, because one can say, Arjuna's argument is nice. I will attain sin by not fighting because I give my duty, but still, I should not fight because sin will arise from killing Brahmins and Gurus in a war to gain a kingdom. So that's true. But the point is he actually dealing in this case with Brahmins and Gurus? No, he's dealing with Kshatriyas on the battlefield because that's the position they've taken. In other words, his point is valid if it was applied in the right situation, but it's not applied in the right situation. That's why many times devotees get confused because two devotees are giving valid arguments on one point. But the question is are they actually applied in the right situation? Right? So it's very important to understand this, because otherwise then some devotees reject the scriptural evidence and scriptural argument because of this point. Right? Oh, you can prove anything with the Shastra, because the Shastra deals with everything. So isn't that a good thing? You know? But the point is you have to be educated enough to know how to apply it. Okay. In verses... Okay. So fighting in ignorance means you actually don't know the situation. The fighting in knowledge then is not unrighteous. Right? So, in verses 38 and 39, so here we could say is Arjuna, he has knowledge of the scriptures, and he's saying you can't kill gurus and brahmins. So would he be in ignorance or in knowledge?
Knowledge.
In knowledge. Okay. But he's misapplying the knowledge. So that's ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? So you have these very subtle things, is that just as if it's not connected to Krishna, it's material. Right? It's nonsense. Or in other words, the Bhagavatam's definition of pious and impious is connected to Krishna, it's pious. It's not connected to Krishna, it's sinful. Right? Then within, let's say, that sinful, then you have that which is supported by Scripture and that which is not. Right? Because the point is if you have black and white, that's nice. Right? Works for Americans, why not? But the thing is how do you, the point is does black always stay black and does white always stay white? How do you get, is the idea to transform black into white? Yes, yeah, so that means you have to have gray. You have to have something that's in between. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, now that gray, what would be two ways you could define it?
Being less white or being more white.
Yeah.
More black, more white.
Yeah, more white. In other words, it's white with a certain amount of percentage of black, or it's black with a certain percentage of white. Right? But the point is that it's combined, that's what makes it gray. Right? So, in other words, it's called devotional service as long as Krishna is involved in the activity that you're performing. Right? Now, we look at the black and white here, in the gray, we analyze the gray is, what is the motive behind it? Is it sakam or nishkam? Right? How much is Krishna is involved, but is it according to Shastra? Right? Then we can define the quality of the service. Then we can add more white to the, you know what I'm saying? But some point out, oh, it's black. Yes, that black is there. Otherwise, why is it gray? You know, oh, this devotee did this. Yes, of course, they're conditioned. They're going to do stuff like that. But are you able to see the white? Or can you see the God consciousness? You can see that, then you can properly define. But if you can only see black, that means, you know, what's the big deal?
You develop the quality to understand the shades of gray.
You understand the shades of gray when you know what gray is made out of. So when you know what is spiritual and you know what is material. Yeah. In other words, so that's sambandhigyan. Chit, achit, ishwara. You know what is the supreme consciousness. You know what is the minute consciousness, and you know what is the material world. When you know these three, then you know their combination. So that's why in this chapter, that's brought out. Knowledge is knowing Chit Achit Ishwara. You don't know that, you're not knowledgeable. Right? So now Arjuna is speaking here, then what is the part that's missing? What is he quoted now? He's talking about not killing Brahmins and Gurus. So what act?
Dharma
Shastra, but what aspect of it? Means in connection with Chit Achit Ishwara. What does he describe? Achit. Ignorance. Right? What is he leaving out?
Ishwara.
And? Chit. Right? So, Krishna is not saying there's a problem that he's quoting Shastra. He's saying is that you're quoting Shastra only knowing Achit. You have to know Shastra along with Chit and Ishwara. Does this make sense? So that's what Krishna's adding. So when you add Chit and Ishwara, does the Achit change? Right? If I have a potato and I'm going to cook it for myself, and then somebody tells me, says, no, you know, you have to offer it to Krishna. Does the potato now magically change?
No,
it's the same potato.
But that's Mahaprasad is much.
But that's after you've offered it. Okay, now let us say you have cooked this potato and you've offered it to Krishna. Right? Now you're going to eat and then someone tells you, oh, it's a fast day. Now what? You understand? So there's these different considerations. So having that understanding is not enough. You have to be able to see it in relationship to Krishna. So what's missing in the first, all of Arjuna's arguments, right, all through the Gita, means, you know, as he goes, it gets better. But in this first and second chapter, is he's only seeing Achit. He's only seeing the material arrangement. Because the point is why can you not kill Brahmins and Gurus? Who has given that definition?
Krishna.
But he's not relating it that Krishna has established this. And why would Krishna establish this?
Protect the principle of authority.
Present authority, but why do you need the principle of authority?
Because
it represents him. And why do you have to have him represented?
Because then you protected the knowledge to go back to him in this world.
Okay, so what is that in relationship to then?
To Chit. For the jivas.
Yes, for the jivas. You understand? In other words, you have the laws of God that are established so that the jivas can be relate to him. So in other words, here it's just material energy is relating to material energy. And so if that's going to change anyway, so that you're saying that it's temporary and it's going to change and you're lamenting about that, that means you don't even know Achit. Because Achit will change. That's why it's Achit. Right? It
so
will change.
He's not saying the benefit of the Chit in his equation, which is to...
Yeah, well, he doesn't even recognize Chit and Ishwara. He's not even recognizing. He's just seeing Dharma on its own. Dharma stands on its own as good. And devotees will make these arguments. Oh, they can't be in this community because they're bad. But what is bad? Right? What is bad? Bad is not connected to Krishna. So the rules of Dharma or the rules of morality and justice, right? Rules of sense grab, these are all based on Krishna's rules and how the soul will interact with God, or the soul will interact with other souls based on their relationship to God. Does that make sense? Right. Now, let us say, Mother Yashoda, okay, is serving Krishna, right? How does she serve Krishna? Yeah, taking care? Parental rasa. Okay, so she is the mother in the relationship. Okay, so for it to be a nice family, then what else is there? Father. That's Nanda Baba. Okay, now, if Nanda Baba's there, right, and that's a constant principle, how much time does she have to think about Krishna? Okay, let's take it a step further so it makes more sense. Okay, now if there was not the principle of a husband and wife have, you know, how you say, as long as their relationships last, they have fidelity, then Mother Jashoda would have to spend time trying to find another husband or another guy to be with. Right? Now, will that take away from her service to Krishna?
Yes.
Right? Because the mother, her whole focus is on the child. Yeah, but now if she has to look about for her own partner, where's her focus? On the new partner, or finding the new partner. Developing that relationship, being comfortable. So where is the time for Krishna? You understand? That's the principle. That's why in the material world, then somebody gets married, expected they'll last. Because point is that whole trip of getting to know this and that, that takes a lot of time. Right? What happens when someone first gets married? You know, does their full-on service and full commitment, does that continue as it was? It reduces. Why? Because they're getting to know, they're getting comfortable. And then you come back a few years later, then it starts to balance. You come back a lot of years later, then it works very smoothly. Right? So now, by them breaking up and then having to find a new partner, is that going to be beneficial for the Krishna consciousness or not? No. Because it'll take away time. That's why, therefore, in the Vedic system, you know, a husband and wife stay together. You understand? So the principles that work in the spiritual world are applied here. Now when people see these rules here without understanding, you know, Chit Ishwara, then they don't know the nature of the material world, so then they think that it's going to last eternally. You know? They don't understand the nature of the soul, you know, and the soul servant of Krishna. They don't understand Krishna and his relationship with the living entities. So therefore, they either don't understand the Vedic system or they misapply it. Right? That's what Rupa Goswami means by Niyamagraha. Right? You reject the rules, you don't understand them, or you misapply them. Right? So here's an example. Right? He's a pious person, so he's not going to come up with some modern, you know, concepts. Though Krishna will bring them up. Right? You know, that's one of the arguments that he uses for us, you know. Why are you worried? You know, there's no soul, it's just the body, you know, it's a bag of chemicals, so then, you know, or bag of bones, but, you know, like that, you know, so then what's the big problem, deal? Does this make sense? Yes? Does Mother Yashoda serve her husband? Would you have a problem with that? So, in other words, if you get to the spiritual world, will you have to serve a husband? So it means there's enough trouble here, and spiritual shouldn't be like here. So, you know, are they more liberated in the spiritual world? You know, are they more, you know, how you say, progressive in the spiritual world than here? But the point is serving Vaishnavs a problem?
No.
So then? What's their relationship based on? What is Mother Yashoda and Nanda Baba going to talk about when they're alone? Krishna. And what are they going to be discussing?
Next service,
how to make nicer arrangements. Mother Yashoda wants to get some new gold ornaments and this and that. Do they have the money? Or this and that. Or Nanda Baba's thinking about doing this. Krishna's favorite cow. He wants to create a new facility. You know, it's all like this. So that's what they're going to discuss. It's all about Krishna. So.
And Krishna is pleased when the Vaishnavas.
Yeah, when the Vaishnavas cooperate together to serve him, then he's happy. And then there has to be some basis of how they interact. There has to be some difference. So then how they'll interact, and that will create something more. Right? Does that make sense? You know? It means the parents are going to, how you say, let's say Nanda Baba with other men or Mother Yashoda with the other elder gopis, then they're going to discuss from the same point of view. right? So one, there's a cooperation, so that's very nice, and that's going to be the major platform. But now if Nanda Bhatta discusses with Mother Jashoda, there's a difference of nature, right? And so that discussion, that will bring out things that may not have come by just the men with the men, women with the women, right? So it's going to add another flavor to the relationship. So they are going to act in their capacity. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's all there. The point is why there's rules here is because that's what's there. Okay. So with verses 38 and 39, the Lord shifts the subject from sakam karma to nishkarma, naishkarmya, or buddhi yoga. In verses 38, Krishna directly instructs Arjuna to fight for the sake of fighting because he desires the battle. Arjuna should do this without considering the results. There will be no sin. So it means sakam means it's, you know, you would call it karma yoga specifically. But when that karma yoga is performed with proper understanding, right, and without a desire for the result, then that becomes naishkarmya. So buddhi yoga is the platform of naishkarmya. Right? So that combination. Yes.
Is sakama karma the same as karma kanda?
Is sakama karma... No, well, it depends on is the sakama in connection with Krishna or not. If it is, it's karma yoga. If it's not, then it's karma kanda.
Oh.
Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
I find some inconsistency. It's written that Krishna now, with verse number 40, starts to explain Bhakti Yoga.
No, it says Buddhi Yoga.
No, but if we take a look on that page 27, on the commentary, it's written that...
Yeah, but is there a difference between Bhakti Yoga and Buddhi Yoga?
I mean, the highest principle of Buddhi Yoga, no.
No, no. The point is Buddhi Yoga is the detail of Bhakti Yoga.
Yeah.
Just like if we say cooking... Okay, you know, this devotee is cooking, right? Where is he? Oh, he's cooking. Okay, and then you ask, what is he doing now? And then you can't just say, well, he's cooking, but you can break it down. So you can say, well, he's cutting the vegetables. Then you know what stage he is in the cooking.
It's like acting in Krishna consciousness.
That's why the fifth chapter is called that, no? Because it's combined, the third chapter, Karma Yoga, with the fourth chapter, Jnana Yoga. So the combination of those two, that's Buddhi Yoga. Right? Because Jnana Yoga means you have the knowledge, you're not working for the result. Karma Yoga means you're working for the result. Right? So when they're combined, that's Buddhi Yoga. So you can't have lower levels where you're still attached to the result. You know, then it's not very well situated. Then we specifically call it karma yoga. But it would be sakam karma yoga. But nishkam karma yoga is also there. That means you're commenting on that they're performing the activity and the result they're not wanting for themselves. But technically, that's called buddhi yoga.
But such buddhi yoga still, although without attachment, may not be fully yet connected to Krishna.
That's there, but fully connected means what? It means, huh? Prema. You understand? So the point is there a discussion? You know what I'm saying? It means we can analyze where it is, but to say the statement that it's not, that's already understood. Vishwanath makes it clear. Bhakti begins at prema. Below bhakti, it's not. Below prema, it's not bhakti. It's in pursuance of bhakti. Right? So that's why we specifically make the distinction pure unalloyed devotion. Because you may have pure devotion, but that the prema we're looking for only comes at the unalloyed platform. Does that make sense? Oops, time to stop.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Janita Gaura Premanandi.